Regenerative agriculture. Regenerative has the word regenerate in it, and that is a verb meaning to add life to improve the health of, to add more vigorous life to.
All right, Sarah and Ashley, I am so pumped that you guys are here. We adore you guys, and I often find myself living vicariously through your lives as sisters and, you know, getting to be first-generation farmers together. You guys are so inspiring to follow along with on Instagram and also YouTube. I know you guys have had a YouTube channel in the past, and I find that anytime I see a post from you guys, I walk away thinking like, oh my gosh, why have I never thought about this before? And I go and I actually try that thing, like the citrus, you know, like repurposing orange peels and making like a citrus cleaner out of it. And yeah, we just really appreciate what you guys bring to the metabolic health space. And I would love to start out by hearing your wellness journeys. And maybe we can start with Ashley, who I know you fairly recently got your period back in November after 13 years of not having one. And so maybe you can start with your journey and then we'll go over to Sarah, just walking us through your wellness journey, like where you started, where you're at now, all the things.
Okay, I'm gonna try to, well, first off, thank you guys for having us on. I've been looking forward to this conversation all week. It's just fun to talk to like-minded people. So thank you guys. I'm gonna try to keep this brief because I have been through a lot in my health journey. I've really been into health and wellness since age 14. And so I'm 29 now. And it all started when I became like obsessed with sports and wanting to be the best athlete ever. And I went to like a sports performance clinic. Shouldn't exist for young kids that age, really shouldn't. And ever since that day, they talked about like nutrition and I just became obsessed with trying to eat healthy. And I think all of us have probably experienced this. The definition of healthy eating has evolved a lot over those years. And so back then it was the typical, you know, brown rice, whole wheat pasta, chicken breast, broccoli, no fat. And so that kind of set me off on a really bad start because I didn't even have my period yet. I got one normal period. And then after that, I was just amenorrheic. So I was definitely like over-exercising, not eating enough. And then come college, I played varsity golf in college. And then I was also mechanical engineering. And so those 4 years like really dug me into a huge stress hole because I barely got any sleep. I was a perfectionist for my sport and also for academics. And then after that, I was like, let's just sign up for more stress and let's go to graduate school. And so, yeah, finally in graduate school, I was like, I've got to address these health problems that have come as a result of living on stress hormones, not eating enough, not fueling myself. And Sarah and I kind of wanted to take our health into our own hands. And so doing some more like...
Were you experiencing anything?
What do you mean?
That made you decide to change your health?
Oh, we kind of... I think Sarah will touch on this a little bit more because she experienced this more than I did. And I think it's a result of you being the second child. Our mom was 41 when she had me and 45 when she had Sarah. So probably very mineral depleted.
Yeah, Morley talks about this a lot.
Yeah. And so Sarah probably got even less delivery to herself because our mom had a miscarriage in between us as well. Mm-hmm. So Sarah kind of dealt with these problems more extreme than I did. But I started to develop, you know, really cold hands and feet, some of the rash on the face, so some autoimmune like symptoms. And that kind of led us down the rabbit hole of fasting, keto, carnivore. And that felt great for a while until it didn't. And I think all of us have gone through that journey where like running on stress hormones and adrenaline, it's like a new feeling and it feels euphoric when you remove all these like hard to digest foods and you are just giving nutrient dense foods into your body. And then when was the first reflection? We tried to go on a diet and lose weight and we weren't able to. And then we have been in macro tracking and gaining weight, losing weight, powerlifting, if it fits your macros for a really long time. And so that kind of woke us up a little bit about how, wait, carnivore actually didn't truly fix and address the root cause. It just suppressed the symptoms, which felt great for a while. And then it's like, oh, well, let's address these. And so that kind of led us down the pro-metabolic, repeat, community. I never like to use the word diet or label any of us as like specifically pro-metabolic, because I think we all have our own take on the approach. And I think we've kind of, through our journey, like blended our interest in regenerative agriculture, nose-to-tail eating, pro-metabolic, eating seasonally, sourcing well, and that's kind of where we are today. So yeah, a long way to explain that I finally realized that I was living on stress hormones for most of my life, and that had extreme negative health consequences. And just to give people hope, if anyone is listening, I had one normal period in my whole life at age 16, and then I didn't have my period, and I got it back after 20 months of committing to it, of trusting the thyroid improving, metabolism improving nutrition principles. And it's been on and off since then. How can you expect a period to be normal after 13 years? And I'm still navigating to make it like fully normal. We've also been through a lot of stress these last couple months. And so I went a month or two without it, but I'm still navigating and getting it back on track. But I know that within this year, I will have a completely normal cycle and headed in the right direction.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. Your whole story is so powerful. And I love you brought up Morley, because yeah, I watched y'all's YouTube video a while back whenever you guys actually sat down with Morley Robbins. He went over was it your full Monty too, or just your HTMAs together?
He did both. Two separate. And I think honestly, what I appreciate most about Morley is, like, you know, after being in the health space for so long, you kind of have a few certain principles that are like, wow, that was the most important thing. I focused on these little things and that's not really important. And like iron accumulation is like a really big health, like out of anything, accumulating iron as you age, I think
this is related to your menstrual
cycle. Yeah, and this is related to my menstrual cycle, because as a female, we naturally release iron. And so Morley really woke me up to that. And I think that donating blood, in addition to reducing stress hormones, really helped me get my period back.
That's amazing. Amazing. Yeah, he went over iron with you guys. Both of you guys share a lot about iron donation on your page. You guys, I mean, we'll link all this in the show notes, but I loved hearing him connect the baby mom piece in y'all's story. So I'm really curious, Sarah, now just like what your journey has been like, and you felt like you're younger and you were able to reflect back and realize, okay, mom was more minerally depleted, nutritionally depleted once you were born. And what has your journey been like?
Yes. So I think something I was reflecting on during Ashley's health journey is she brought up, we started our health journey and we started fasting and eating keto and carnivore. And like the fact that we considered that our health journey, and then within that period of time, we tried to go on a diet, but I would like everybody to understand that we didn't have our periods. So priorities were just severely misplaced. And I don't think that we understood that, because we at the time saw health as like, oh, a lean body, you know,
Where's your abs?
Looking great, performance in the gym. And now when we think about health, we're obviously thinking about like digestion, how are we sleeping, menstrual cycle. So we've had an extreme shift, and that in itself has caused us to really reflect on like our daily habits and what we consider health now. And so when I asked Ashley while she was explaining that, like, what was she dealing with? And her symptoms were obviously similar to mine, and this is like popping up an autoimmune disease. And I think that people only really make changes to their health when disease becomes present. And that's really sad, because, you know, poor digestion is not really considered a symptom. Not getting a menstrual cycle, or, you know, not ovulating is not considered a symptom, but these are all symptoms of poor health. So finally understanding that has opened this like huge can of worms, because I feel like once you start working on your metabolic health, like, you're no longer symptom suppressing and all of these things pop up. So that's where we're kind of at now. So I think a lot of people will resonate with that. Like, we're not fully there. And I don't know if there's ever like an end destination in one's health journey. It's constantly trying to, you know, repair all of the holes that you dug in the past. And so my health journey is very similar to Ashley's in terms of the under eating, over exercising, being too small, not getting my period, developing autoimmune disease, suppressing symptoms. And then I think the more recent journey has been after we were exposed to toxic mold in our farmhouse, because that coming from a fragile place of already being so depleted and running on stress hormones to having to suddenly deal with a very, very heavy toxic burden and not being able to properly detoxify, because obviously my liver was not functioning well after no carbs and all these different things. So that has been the most difficult part of my own health journey. I did get my period back pretty seamlessly. It didn't take that long, but now it's more so like, how can I improve my metabolism to properly detoxify all of these, yes, excess liver, but also, or excess iron, but also excess estrogen from not having proper ovulation for the last decade or more, and then having to deal with environmental toxins too. So that's a huge focus of ours, is how can we minimize the toxins in the environment to give our bodies the best chance to actually function and thrive. So that is where we're at now.
Well, just one more thing on that. I think the biggest thing we've realized from that mold exposure is there is so much more to health than what you eat.
Oh my God, yeah.
And that we were so focused on that.
What you eat and what you look like.
Yeah.
That's all that we're taught is like, diet, be skinny, and eat clean. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Half the time it's wrong.
I think it actually gave us like a huge, more holistic picture that health is lifestyle, environment, and nutrition.
And that totally goes into the whole aspect of regenerative farming too. It's so funny how similar it is to how you farm and what happens to the soil.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I cannot wait to dive in more to regenerative farming. First though, we need to hear all about Angel Acres. So I have loved following along with you guys and seeing your journey. First of all, you're one of my favorite Instagram accounts. I feel like I've surely told you that before, but y'all's sense of humor, your moves, your chicken videos, like all of it, it's the best. And so when you guys bought Angel Acres, I know that first of all, it wasn't like an easy process. There was, you know, I know there were lots of road bumps, and then of course, still you're finding things like mold, and it's just a lot to like do all of this and keep up with all of it. But why don't you tell everybody, like, what was the process to finding your land? Obviously you guys dove in as first generation farmers, so like you're coming in completely new to all of this, and that's so just inspiring and cool. So will you just kind of walk us through like, what did it look like to find your land and, you know, kind of how all of that has sort of panned out?
Yeah. So we actually tried to detail this process on YouTube and made this video like how to start a farm, and thinking of like, we were going to be super helpful, but we look back and we're like, 100% no. We're so wrong and naive, and it's been so much more challenging, but it's been a great learning opportunity. So
let me just provide a little bit more backstory. I guess one thing that we didn't include in our health journey, which I think is important in this discussion of regenerative agriculture, is we spent a period of time being plant-based. We called ourselves vegan, V-E-G-G-A-N. So we ate vegan but had eggs.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a thing. I don't know.
In hindsight, it's just vegetarian.
No, we didn't do dairy though, because dairy is inflammatory.
that branding though, that is pristine branding. Wow.
We've carried that into our Angel Acres very much so. So we spent a very significant time eating just like mounds of vegetables. Like I'm sure you guys have been in the If It Fits Your Macros and like the whole volume eating. Like we spent so many years doing volume eating, and like looking back, it's just, I'm sorry, body.
I mean, thinking about
like, I am sorry.
Kelp noodles with bok choy with cabbage, because the kelp noodle wasn't enough.
Yeah. I think that because in the reason that we did that is because we thought it was best for our health and we thought it was best for the environment. We've always cared about the environment. We've always cared about animal welfare, and we were so clueless, because that is not true. It just, all of the lies that we believed at the time, not true. So one thing that I'm very grateful about our carnivore journey is we went into carnivore and I was like, I want to eat to support the environment. I want to eat to support animal welfare. And so our carnivore journey introduced us to regenerative agriculture. So if we didn't go through that, we wouldn't have found regenerative agriculture, because I wanted to eat this way while also supporting the environment. So
also sourcing from good places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how we got into regenerative agriculture. And I remember the first summer that Sarah and I learned about this, we went on this thing that we called Tour de Local Farms. And so we visited every local farm we could find, because before this, we were like, food comes from the grocery store, right? And so we were just like so excited, like, wow, look at all these farms we can visit. Look how passionate these farmers are. Wow, their soil and their grass is so green. It's so cool. So we got super excited and we met every local farmer that we could. And ever since that summer, I have been absolutely hooked to regenerative agriculture. And I think that that seed of wanting to start our own farm was planted that summer. Mm-hmm. And Sarah and I have lived together now for a number of years. And we were trying to decide on like what to do next
after college.
I finished grad school and was interviewing at a few different places and I just wasn't excited about it. And so we decided to jump into a farm and very naive, had no idea what was coming. Like you said, first generation. And so I think we have a YouTube video outlining this, but we spent a full summer looking for land and we wanted to choose this area because it's close to where our parents are going to retire. And our parents are a little older, so we want to make sure that we're close to them. And so that was a very challenging summer because just land after land after land just didn't work, wasn't good. And how many months was that? Like 4 months or so?
Yeah, we also, a big decision that one needs to make is deciding between just leasing land or buying land. And so there's a lot of different opinions on this too. And I think that it would have been more wise as first generation farmers with no experience to lease land because there's less risk. However, we always take that jump. That's just in our personality. We just went for it. And so we actually got really lucky because this was, I think, during COVID.
No, it was right before COVID started.
Yeah, but for some reason, land prices were very, very good at this time.
Right after that, land prices jumped up.
Yes. So we very much invested in this and
took out, like, we took out a loan. Yeah. We will owe money on this property for a while, but I think we are confident that over time we can make it work.
And I think that's something that's really popping up now is a lot of people want to move out of cities and be more on their own and be in the country. And so I think it's a worthwhile investment if, you know, if you're listening to this right now and you're thinking about homesteading. I think that's something that we're probably going to go into in this conversation of all of the benefits and how you can actually save money long term by having your own resources.
Yeah.
You are the resource, you know?
Mm-hmm. And we were kind of like discouraged on like the finances and things like that. And then we stumbled upon the current property like 5 months later. We were already like, okay, we're just going to hold this off for a number of years. And this property had this wedding barn, this big red barn. And having that other business on the property of like a wedding barn and a farm.
Like stacking your enterprises.
Yeah. It just made a little bit more sense. So we fell into this place on accident and I just really think that it was meant to be.
For a number of reasons.
Yeah.
It's a number of reasons. Cause like you said, there's been a lot of bumps in the road and our whole first year of quote unquote farming was spent remediating mold and trying to figure out what was happening. And so I think that was necessary though, because it's further incentivized us to learn more about environmental factors in health. And so your food and farming all go into that.
Yeah, last year was really tough. We lived I was living at my parents' house, which is
we lived in a tent for 2 months.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, before that, we had to I was living at our parents' house and we had to drive like 30 minutes to the farm and back to the house 2 times a day.
Wow.
And so a lot of things were put on pause, but like she said, we went through it for a reason and we learned a lot.
Yeah. Which is everybody's health journey, you know?
Sure. Will you remind me, do you guys have a story behind the name Angel Acres? I remember when you were like voting on, you know, what to call it. And I don't remember, like, how did you guys land on that?
Okay. So this is a test for you guys. How do we end our YouTube videos?
Ooh, I don't know. Caught me. I don't know.
Okay. If you made it to the end of a YouTube video, God bless you.
Bless you.
Oh my gosh. I love you.
We would say behave like an angel.
Yeah,
I would say this. And honestly, like where this came from is like, you remember text signatures? So like your little phone, you could save a signature and it would like sent, it would be at the bottom of each text. So you'd say, hey mom. And then the signature would be sent automatically with it. My signature was behave like an angel and Sarah's was stay bad. He above you. And
we're happening right now.
It came from that. And the whole, like, I really think that, like, we've been through a lot of challenges, but, like, a higher power has guided us through this whole process. And this past year, I believe that more now than ever, with the really mental challenging things, obstacles that we've faced, and we are still standing here today. And so I really do think that we have angels watching above us. Like, that is not a joke.
I take that fully seriously. The backstory of it had me laughing, but I'm like, hey, I am here for it. So Angel Acres. And so people that are tuning into this podcast that have actually don't know much about, like, regenerative agriculture. I know you guys, like, developed this passion after, so you swung from plant-based to carnivore. Is that what you guys did? I feel like that's a common pattern.
It was plant-based with a quick stop at keto.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Carnivore, yeah.
Little
yeah.
detour. Little in the universe. Yeah, I love it. So what can you tell our audience as far as, like, an intro to regenerative agriculture? Like, why is this important? Why is it important for us to care about our soil? These are all really big questions, but for people that are not aware of, you know, what people like you are doing and what a lot of these regenerative farmers are doing, what can you tell our audience about an intro to this practice?
Okay, so I could talk about this for hours, so you guys are going to need to put, like, a stop at me, but I'm going to try to keep it brief. So regenerative agriculture, regenerative has the word regenerate in it, and that is a verb meaning to add life to improve the health of, to add more vigorous life to. And so we have to look at two sides of the spectrum. We've got regenerative agriculture, which is regenerating the soil, and then we've got destructive or kind of more conventional industrial agriculture that's degrading the soil. And obviously there's, like, a spectrum in between of different practices. And the reason we should care about this is because the soil underneath our feet is what we use to grow 95% of our food. So that soil is necessary for future food security. If we continue to degrade that soil, we will be relying on lab-made food for our food. And so the whole idea of regenerative agriculture is to regrow nutrient-dense topsoil, because a number of agriculture practices that we have practiced over the last, especially, like, 100 years, have been degrading our topsoil. So you can think of, like, heavy tillage, heavy chemical use. These type of things have long-term consequences. Yes, they allow people to grow food here and now, but over time we are losing the topsoil because it's being eroded into our waterways, and we are destroying the beautiful microbial life inside the soil with these heavy chemical usage. So there's plenty of evidence documenting that I want to say it's like a truckload of soil is lost for every family in the United States every year, or something insane like that. So we are just losing topsoil at an enormous rate. So then we got to think, okay, how can we regrow it? Well, if we let land sit on its own with no disturbances, it takes about 500 years to grow an inch of topsoil.
Wow.
How can we accelerate that? With the use of animals and other permaculture techniques, such as like compost and things like that. So we can thank large herds of bison for the nutrient-dense topsoil that we have today. The prairies across Native America, were the nutrient-rich topsoil was grown from large herds of bison that stayed in a certain area for a period of time. They did a little bit of land impact. They peed, they pooped, and then they moved on, and that land had time to rest. So regenerative agriculture refers to, like, a set of farming practices. It's not just animals. It also involves crops that is trying to regrow and regenerate topsoil. And my favorite way to explain this is regenerative agriculture is working with biology. So how can we provide the tools for the natural biology in the soil to grow nutrient-rich food versus the industrial conventional model, which is trying to use chemistry to fight nature? Which one's going to win? Biology will win every single time. And so that's kind of the whole goal of regenerative agriculture, is working with nature, providing nature the tools it needs to be able to produce food without the use of heavy toxic chemical use.
Mm.
I want to zoom in on this a little bit more. And first, I know you guys listening can't see this, but it's really wonderful and fitting that you guys have a picture of a cow behind you. Makes me really happy. So I'm curious, you know, you laid out some of this, Ashley, just now, but how do you respond to arguments from people that meat eating is, you know, quote, harming the environment? And then if you want to throw in, like, do you see any other common criticisms of regenerative agriculture? And then how do you respond to those?
Yeah. So, first off, I think it's important to consider time scales. So if one is narrowing in their focus on right here, right now, yes, cows are going to burp out methane and crops won't be producing as much methane, but that is a very reductionist thinking. And you're thinking of the here and now. What are the long-term consequences of degrading the soil? Methane has a like different carbon cycle. And so we need to think longer term. What are these farming practices doing to the ecosystem at that farm? Are the cows helping to regrow and improve the soil health, which over time can bring more biodiversity to the soil, bring more biodiversity to our food and the different animal species and microbes that are at that farm? Or are we trying to like just monocrop and slowly destroying the natural biology over time? So I really try to get people to think about long-term consequences. Monocropping, chemical usage of corn and soy, that field is dying more and more each year. Each year it requires more and more chemicals. So what will that field look like in 10 years from now? And if you are rebuilding and regrowing ecosystems, that is a whole heck of a lot better for the environment than slowly degrading it and making that soil almost die year after year. So that's kind of the biggest thing. And then cows are a very easy scapegoat. It is a very easy way to point fingers at a cow and be like, look, you can see the methane readings. It's burping. It's farting. That is higher than what this soybean will do. And again, the time scale argument, but it is a huge distraction because we are huge on regenerative agriculture because it can help us improve food security, improve soil health over time. But animal agriculture is actually a very small percentage of the greenhouse gas emissions. If you take a look at like the pollutants and what like big companies are doing, cows are just an easy distraction and scapegoat. And so I think that the long-term ecosystem development is the biggest thing to consider because I don't think people think much beyond like the here and now. Two other big things. A lot of people say regenerative and organic agriculture cannot feed the world. That's false. Rodal Institute has created a wonderful study that you can go check out, and they just disproved that. Also, right now, we produce enough food to feed 1.7 times the population, 1.5 times the population. There is so much food waste. So that argument is just not true. And then another thing is almost half of the United States is classified as pasture land, and it's not suitable for crop production. Therefore, the best thing that we can do for food security is having animals on that pasture land, because ruminants are incredible creatures. They can turn a blade of grass into nutrient-dense meat, milk for human consumption. I'm sorry, humans, we can't eat grass and get nutrients out of it. Ruminants have a four-chamber complex digestive system where they can convert this cellulose into nutrient-dense meat and milk. And so in terms of food security, we can't waste half of U.S. pasture land and just let it sit there. It would make sense to put ruminants on there for food security because it produces very nutrient-dense food. And ruminants, like without ruminants on that land, we would be wasting the solar energy reaching those grasses. So those were two more points.
Yes.
If you're in this community like ProMetabolic, who we understand and appreciate animal products, we're actually very small. So we're actually like the losing side of a very big push against animal products. So if you actually take yourself out of our little box and go into the vegan world, it's like there's so much money behind all of their agendas to utilize lab-grown products to try to replace animal products. And so it's our purpose of sharing our journey and, you know, encouraging people to find their local farmers is literally to just do what we can in order to just move the needle forward a little bit. It's not as if we're ever going to expect to like Ashley and I in our farm. We're not expecting to feed the masses. It's what can you do as an individual to help a farmer survive so they can continue to produce products for you? Because more and more farmers are going under because there's not enough support for them. And it's very hard to get by as a farmer at this rate. And so that's kind of our goal, is to just encourage people to make those connections. Because like Ashley said, before we started Carnivore, we thought the food came from the grocery store. And that's what most people do believe. And so if we can educate people, I think that is our role here.
And we, our land here was really degraded, used for like conventional agriculture. And so we are documenting that conversion process. Yeah. So like flipping land from one that was used for conventional agriculture to, we want to create it into this beautiful, thriving ecosystem. And how can one disagree with that transformation?
Yeah.
It's going to take a number of years.
If you guys have seen like the HGTV, like house flipping, we might in the future, if we have time, be like land flippers.
Yeah.
So that could be one thing.
Using animals for that. And so like she said, education is kind of the main thing for us, because when one realizes these things and takes a step back, they realize that these large corporations that are pointing fingers at cows, they don't get money from the sales that when you buy and support your local farmer, they get huge profits from lab made food, enormous profits, because it's cheap and they get all of the money.
Yeah.
When you buy and support your local farmer, that's a threat to their business. That's a threat to their model. And Impossible Foods CEO has literally said point blank, my goal is to end animal agriculture by 2035. Mm. So there, like she said, there's a huge, enormous uphill battle that,
So then you brought up the nose to tail. And I think that alone connects people to their farmer, because you will not find those products at the grocery store. And so not only is that wasteful, but it is a good reason for somebody to literally have to go to their farmer to get them. And so we share about eating nose to tail primarily for the nutrient density. Like there's just, it is non-comparable in terms of like comparing beef liver and beef kidney to like a chicken breast or even just a beef steak. Like, yes, there's great nutrients in those meats too. And we do eat muscle meat. However, the organs are like little pots of gold and they are largely wasted. So they are either thrown away or there are some regulations that did not allow the farmer to get them back from the processor.
Quick pause there to expand on that point. We took our lamb flock to the processor in January of this year. First time ever. It was an absolute SHIT show. We were going to borrow an animal trailer and that fell out last minute. So we're like, we have 20 lamb that we need to get to a processor 40 minutes away. What do we do? We rented a U-Haul truck. That was we ended up getting 19 out of the 20 lamb onto that U-Haul truck. But that was a interesting day. Once we got the lamb onto the U-Haul truck, it actually worked well to transport them to the processor. But anyways, we show up to the processor and they're like, what are these girls doing with the U-Haul truck? But behind the processor, you see this large mound and it's like, wow, that's just a lot of animal heads. That's a lot of animal skin. That's a lot of animal waste. There are huge USDA regulations that do not allow processors to get access to really anything above the head because of the scare of mad cow disease. And so to bring up your point, Corey, like there is so much waste at processing plants. And it was really enlightening to see that large mound, just, it's going to be taken to a landfill and be thrown away.
Yeah. But, I mean, so, well, yeah. Another thing though, with that, it just tying back to like the struggle that farmers go through is like, just let scheduling a processor, let alone like getting your animal there, is like a whole different battle. All of our, processing facilities are made and revolve around very large facilities or very large amounts of animals coming in. And so if you're wondering in that regard, because I know we're going to talk about expenses, why it's more expensive is because it's very challenging to be smaller scale and to do things right without taking shortcuts.
Mm-hmm. And so, the nose to tail side, like, honestly, I would take a beef shank, a beef oxtail over a tenderloin any day. And so it's just like, we've been America, we've just been taught, okay, here's your tenderloin, your chicken breast, here are the just the lean cuts that are very high in like methionine, you're not really getting much collagen and gelatin. And none of us experience these beautiful nutrient dense cuts that are less expensive than these bougie cuts.
I think it's important to note that we were not always like that. And I'm sure you guys weren't always like that either. And so it's more so familiarizing yourself with it, understanding like what options are out there. And I think if we do go into pricing, this is an important thing to talk about, is the different cuts of animal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good thought. For those listening who are like fully convinced now, okay, yes, I want to start supporting, you know, regenerative agriculture. How do you encourage people to start? And is there, you know, I'm going to assume that like just because someone's local doesn't necessarily mean they are pursuing regenerative practices. Like, how do you navigate finding someone who is really pursuing this as well?
Yeah, that's tricky.
First off, don't overwhelm yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not perfect. No. There's no way in heck that you can source everything that you consume from a regenerative farm. Yeah. It's just about making the tweaks that you can afford and that you have access to. So don't put too much pressure on yourself. I always tell people the easiest place to start is with eggs. Find your local farmer where you can get pasture-raised eggs from, and it allows you to go to the farm, see the chickens, see the farm, gain that relationship with your farmer. So I think like the easy step in is with your eggs.
Yeah, that's a good point. So there are some resources like eatwild.com where you can search and find a farmer. But like you said, just because it's local, I guess it doesn't necessarily mean that they are practicing regenerative agriculture. So I think that's where it becomes important to actually contact them and try to have a conversation. And most times if they're really passionate about farming, they're going to be like Ashley, where you can't get off the phone for like a 30 minutute straight because she's talking about it so passionately. And so just establishing that relationship and asking some questions about, you know, are they moving their animals? What are they feeding their animals? Things like that, like really simple, you know, are they using antibiotics and harsh chemicals? What do they put on their fields? Are they using, you know, pesticides and stuff? And so these kind of questions are important to understand what is actually happening at the farm, more so than just like, oh, this farm is down the street. Because you're exactly right. Like 9 times out of 10, the farm down the street probably isn't, you know, the best practices. Not to say they're bad, but they may not be doing things what you're looking for. And so that also means being weary of the word organic, because, you know, it's very expensive for a farm to become organic. And so just because the farm is not organic does not mean that they're not doing things right. So again, it's all about the conversation and maybe even physically going there, which you should, the farmer should let you come to their farm, you know, on their own schedule when they are free, to be able to see if it, like with your own eyes, what's happening.
Just because a farm isn't labeled as organic doesn't mean they're not practicing things the right way.
Yes.
Like you guys said, you've got to go there and ask the questions.
Yes. This is important at farmers markets, because I used to like love going to farmers markets, and the more I learned about what's actually going on, I'm like, I'll pass. Because first off, some quote unquote farms are literally reselling grocery store items as like local, organic, all this stuff with like adding labels to food that was grown probably like thousands of miles away. It's absurd.
Wow.
This is like big business, guys. And wow. Next, just like, it was basically what you said, just because it's local doesn't mean it's necessarily better. They might be using sprays, chemicals. So, but again, just because it's not organic doesn't mean it's worse. So it's that conversation again. Are you guys using sprays? What do you use, you know, for pest control? What are you giving your animals in terms of hormones and antibiotics? Those questions are so important, because that's how you're going to uncover, hey, this farm is really aligning with me and my values and my price range. So I'm going to support them.
So if we talk about like a spectrum, right? The absolute best option that none of us will have access to for everything, and that's okay, is regeneratively grown. Other terms for good crop production is like biodynamic farming. That is a great farming practice, but not everyone has access to that, and that's okay. And then
more than likely those practices are organic.
Yes. Yeah. They're like, those are above organic. And then you've got like organic agriculture and then conventional agriculture. So we personally don't want to throw a bunch of Roundup and glyphosate in our body. So when we don't have access to local farmers who are practicing regenerative biodynamic, then we do buy organic at the grocery store. And I know I've seen both of you guys post about this too. Commonly we buy frozen organic produce that was picked when it was ripe and then frozen. And I think that that's kind of one of the best ways to kind of mitigate the challenges of trying to find organic produce that wasn't shipped halfway across the world and just sitting there and you don't really know its ripeness. And the beauty of like modern times is that we do have access to UPS, FedEx, perishable shipping. And if you do want to support farms that are on the other side of the country from you, like that does allow you to have some trust because maybe they're sharing their journey on social media or something like that. So yeah, just seeking out and finding a farmer that, like she said, is able to answer your questions and is upfront about it and not trying to hide things.
That's fantastic. I love that you guys brought up the point about the frozen picking when it's ripe, freezing it. Because a lot of, you know, if you go buy like a pre-cut something and it's like in a package and it's not frozen, sometimes those are sprayed with, you know, chemicals to keep it fresh in the package. So the frozen thing is like a really good tip. I love that. And then going back really quick, because you guys touch on this, but I want to like emphasize it one more time. So if you are going to your local farmer, in order of like top three, if you want to put those in like a hierarchy as well, as far as questions that you're asking them that you would like to have like a check mark next to, what would those be? Let's say if you're buying, let's say probably raw milk, because I feel like this is the most common question that we get. Raw milk, and then maybe even like, yeah, let's go with the raw milk, the yes. Raw milk question.
Yeah, that's an FAQ in our DMs as well. Like the safety, how do I know it's safe? Or my daughter wants, I want to give my baby the raw milk or something. So again, the organic thing, not the most important question. Our raw milk is not certified organic. Doesn't mean he's not using certified organic practices. It's just, it's that cost. So I would say, and Ashley and I were talking about this earlier, I think one of the most important things is understanding the sanitization of the facility. How clean is the area in which they're milking? Are they washing things regularly? Because that is where you risk, it's not the milk itself where you're really risking, you know, all the different potentially harmful bacteria. It's probably more so in getting the milk to you and all the different machines it's had to touch and hands and all these different things that could be in the environment. That could infect the milk potentially. Again, not really a huge risk if you're sourcing from a good place. So I would want to know, you know, how clean the environment is.
And if they test their milk on occasion.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty important. And, you know, most places who are selling raw milk, they do have to get tested. Mm-hmm. So if they are actively, you know, promoting that they're selling raw milk, they're probably getting tested. That is something you could ask though. Next, I want to know what my animal has been eating. I think, you know, we know that what you feed the animal is directly mimicked in the product that you're getting from the animal. So this happens with meat and toxins in the fats of the meat. Same thing with the milk. So I think that also applies to like, are they getting any hormones or antibiotics? That's a big reason for buying, you know, raw and from local farms, because we want to avoid the hormones and antibiotics that's in store-bought, a lot of the store-bought milks. So those questions, do you have any more questions?
Yeah, and then I think just how you manage the animals. So do they stay inside all day? Do you rotate them around different pastures? Because one of the reasons for regenerative agriculture is the animal side of regenerative agriculture is regularly moving your animals to fresh patch of grass. That improves their immunity, improves their health, and then you don't need a bunch of hormones, antibiotics, and vaccines. And so having like a good strategy of rotating and regularly moving your animals, that will lead to just healthier animals and just better.
Yeah, less risk of the contamination in that regard too. And I also, the first place I saw this was like Slow Down Farmstead, if you guys follow her.
Yes.
A long time ago, I saw her really, really yellow butter. And I was like, why is it so much more yellow than like her other butters? And it's because those grass were, that was like her spring butter. So those cows were out eating grass. They were getting so many different nutrients. And that was reflected in the cream of the milk, which became the butter. And I thought that was so amazing. That really opened my eyes to like, wow, it really does matter where you're getting your food from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah. And to even share like a tidbit about my own personal experience, it's fine if the first 1, 2, 3 places that you go to don't end up being like up to par. The raw milk that we get ours from right now is the sixth place that we have like rotated around to. And the reason that we were so drawn to this place, number one, it tasted amazing. It's actually goat's milk, but the woman who runs it, she sent me like a paragraph as far as like, hey, this is what I need you to do. As far as like, this is how you take care of my jars and this is what we do and don't use this kind of soap. And I was like, she's got my investment for sure. Cause you can tell that she just cares so much about how everything is handled. And you kind of want that, as opposed to just like, you know, whatever. I know that it can be very difficult to find raw milk. And I feel for you if you're on that journey right now and you can't find, that around you. I mean, we have like 3 different milking places on the entire island. And then after that, it's like kind of like black market situation. And so, you have to be on a wait list. So I completely understand the struggle of like driving 2 hours to go get something. And so if that's not an option, if getting raw milk in person isn't an option, what is your favorite, way to source milk from a store if need be?
Yeah, we like go ahead. Well, so there's options. So I mimic you, Ashley and I went to this like quote unquote grass fed goat farm to get milk and we drove up there and the goats were like on mud in this very small pen. And we just like turned around because it just made us uncomfortable. So you're right. Like it's trial and error. Don't get discouraged.
Yeah.
So there are options for buying raw milk online. I love looking at Dutch Meadows website.
Favorite online shopping. Without a doubt.
And there's another one called Miller's Bio Organic Farm or something like that. And so those are 2 options. It is going to be more expensive. And so that is the downside because you will have to pay for shipping. So I think what Ashley was trying to go into in terms of like store-bought milk, there are brands like Kelowna Organics.
Recently, we actually had a conversation with this company. They source from regenerative farms, Kelowna Supernatural. They source from regenerative farms in Iowa, I believe, and they have some great products. And so I think if you're going to do store-bought, Kelowna Supernatural, and then there's this brand Strauss in California.
Alexander
is another brand.
And then, Organic Pastures.
Yes.
And so also in California only.
I think it's important to clarify to your audience that like all animal products are nutrient dense. There's a spectrum, right? But it's better to get animal products in your diet than not to get them at all. So need to find and meet yourself where you're at in terms of sourcing and like budget and fit it in how you can.
Yeah. Another thing we like to consider is like, it's more so what's not in the product. And so like she said, all animal products are going to be very nutrient dense, but if you can, you know, buy organic from the store as opposed to like the one that has all the synthetic stuff in it. And so for example, let's say you're trying to, you're drinking so much milk and you don't want to drink so much whole milk. So you're like, oh, I need to buy 2%, but all the 2% because of a rule in the US have to have vitamins A and D added. What do I do? You can utilize something like Kelowna Supernatural, put it into what is it called? A drink dispenser,
spigot,
let it sit for, you know, a day or two and you'll see the cream start to concentrate at the top. And so that's just a really easy hack. We had a post on this easy hack to just kind of maybe get, you know, 2% milk out the bottom. Again, we're not trying to avoid the cream, but if you're drinking, you know, a gallon or 2 milk a day, that will add up. So it just depends on your goal, but there's always a way to make it work for you. You don't have to be perfect. I like to think of what's not in the product. So when you're at the store looking at that ingredient list, is it just, you know, milk? That's great. It's probably better than the one with like synthetic vitamins A and D added, all these different gums, et cetera, that you're going to see on like oat milk and stuff.
There was actually a very recent study showing that humans were reacting to the nanoparticles added to these mass produced milks. And so again, it just goes back
to the actual lactose or dairy.
So again, it just goes back to like humans have this really great ability to mess up our food really easily. Yeah. So that's one reason why, like, sourcing directly from your farmer, it's not being mixed into these large pools. And there's, like, you can isolate things and test out your sensitivity a little bit easier sourcing directly from your farmer when you know the variables a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. This milk spigot tip, I will link in the show notes because I was obsessed with it whenever I saw it. So I'll make sure you guys have that who are listening. And then, yeah, even like, yeah, for like Alexander, I buy their, whenever I'm out of raw milk, because we can only buy half a gallon at a time just because of sourcing. And so whenever I go to the store, I get Alexander A2. It's not even grass fed, but it's some of my favorite milk. And it's actually super, it's one of those like really, 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 really creamy milks. And so me breastfeeding right now, it's like a good option for me to get like more of those fats in there. Go ahead.
Wait, so Alexander's, I think it's the first dairy farm that's certified regenerative organic.
They're amazing, yeah.
So they practice regenerative agriculture and they're certified organic. I think it's the first dairy farm ever.
I just learned something today. That's incredible.
They're
that's
great.
That's a great one to support then.
And the spigot thing, you do need to buy non-homogenized. So that is an important thing because a lot of milk, when it's homogenized, the fat globules are mixed in, whereas with it's non-homogenized, it will have that cream separation.
But again, like you said, Corey, there's no reason to avoid the fat in the milk. Ashley and I are trying to like maximize our dairy intake. So we're drinking a lot of milk.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it's very important to get those nutrients from raw dairy or, you know, just butter or cream in general.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the milk separation is a really good lead into the resourcefulness conversation, because this is another really common question that we got. I mean, just frequently, but also in terms of having a conversation with you guys. I feel like you guys have done a really great job of sharing just tips and tricks on your platform about how to really utilize like everything that you have at your disposal, like, you know, milk and separating your milk and repurposing orange peels and, you know, no-till eating, like all of this is so up your alley. And I want to know, you know, what are some staple ways that you guys have repurposed your own food to save money? And how can you encourage our audience to kind of get started in utilizing everything they have?
So I think step one, I think it's the least scary, is to find your local farmer and buy a half cow or a full cow or a half lamb or a full lamb.
This was more sustainable.
I know, but hold on. Or a half pig or a full pig. Ask for everything back. Because if it is your local farmer, they can probably go to a state inspected processing facility, which isn't as strict as a USDA inspected processing facility. And so try to get everything back. The head, all the fat on the animal, all the bones. Because that purchase will provide you with not only meat and organs, but it'll also provide you with bone broth, cooking fat for like a full year. So I think that is honestly step one, where you'll have to have storage space. So like a chest freezer or something like that. But asking for getting everything back, I think it will provide you with nutrients for a lot longer than you anticipated. And you're going to save money from the bone broth, because we got some of our bones for free when we bought a full cow. We got the fat back completely for free. He was like, "You want the suet?" I was like, "Yes." Every ounce of fat on that cow should be in our bag. And he's like, "I'll give it to you all for free." And so therefore we made tallow. So tallow is rendered beef fat. And it is, I think, the best cooking fat there is, because it has a really high smoke point and it's very stable in terms of oxidative stability. And so we rendered down all the beef fat, and I think we were still using the tallow like just a few months ago. And so it'll last years. So I think that honestly, that is one of the best investments that you can make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and along those lines too, this isn't really repurposing, but like it's more so maximizing your resources. Mm-hmm. When you get things back like liver, you're suddenly, you can cut out like half your supplements.
Yeah.
You no longer need to buy supplements. So you're kind of repurposing in that sense, like just close your cabinet and instead utilize the organs as your extra boost of nutrients. So that's three things right there, is making tallow from the beef fat, using the organs as supplements, and utilizing the bones as broth.
Along those lines though, not just raw bones from your animal, whenever, and Fallon, you messaged us about this in the notes, whenever you are cooking any meat that has a bone in it, you should probably be cooking it low and slow, because it probably has a ton of connective tissue in it. And so save that braising liquid. So like, let's say our favorite cut, well, my favorite cut is a lamb shank. There's so much connective tissue along that bone. And so if you cook it and you braise it, which is this idea of like a low simmer for 3 to 4 hours, if you braise it, you are losing some of the nutrients, just a small amount of nutrients into the braising liquid, but you can save the braising liquid. And that braising liquid is going to serve as a broth. It's going to be really wiggly jiggly. And so just start thinking about like your cooking methods and how you can save everything from that cooking process. So that's one example. And then whenever you're cooking like a full chicken or like a full turkey, save the carcass, put it in a bag and throw it in your freezer. And then when you want to make your next batch of bone broth, just, it doesn't matter what bones you use. Just throw them all into the crock pot. Just save all those bones and use them to make broth. So that's another tip for resourcefulness.
Yeah, that's great. And then in terms of, we're really not the best at this. So Ashley and I are like actively trying to be more resourceful and more self-sustainable. So these are just like little things that are really easy to do, but we eat a lot of oranges, for example. And so I think we just posted this on Instagram. It was really cool to just be able to take those orange peels and store them, soak them
in vinegar,
and then make an all-purpose cleaning spray, because you're knocking off two birds with one stone. You're using food scraps. You're now suddenly getting an all-purpose cleaner, and you're avoiding a lot of toxins that are in commercial cleaners. So there's so many of those things that just go hand in hand together, which I'm obsessed with. And then another thing we do, which is probably everybody can do this to an extent, is utilizing food scraps to just kind of like feed other things or the environment. So I guess you might have to have like backyard chickens, but we pretty much don't throw anything away. And I guess you, if you don't have, you know, chickens or something, could hypothetically start forming your own compost and just start putting all of your food scraps into the compost and just letting that build on itself.
Yeah. One of the best, like, actually, like, Fallon and Corey, you guys could do this. You guys could start a worm farm. And I know that that's, like, so silly. Worms are, I'm obsessed with worms. I am proud to be an up-and-coming worm farmer. Very proud. Worms are some, so we've talked about the importance of animals in repairing soil health. Worms, we need worms to improve. The worms are incredible. There's so many benefits to the compost that comes out of them. So the way that I've been told is like worms are like a straw. They suck food in and then they poop it out. And that poop is liquid gold. It's called vermicast. And it is one of the best things that you can put on your garden. And Fallon, I know you've started potatoes, I think. Mm-hmm. And so your food scraps, like a really good way to use them. And this is long-term thinking. So a really good way to use your food scraps is to feed them to your worms in a worm farm. It doesn't require much space. You can do it in these little bins. And all you need to do is have your worms, some like leaves or organic matter in your food scraps. And you feed them every couple of days and give them water. Over the course of a few months, they produce vermicast, which is like the most nutrient-dense thing that you can, single-handedly, the most nutrient-dense thing you can put on your garden or whatever crops that you're growing.
Wow.
So saving all your food scraps in a bin in your freezer, and then when it's full, going to go feed your worms. Mm-hmm. I was told that worms can eat blue jeans and turn them into vermicast. And so worms are what we need, because as human species, we go through so much waste. Mm-hmm.
So the result of your vermicast, though, is you're now the producer of more nutrient-dense foods. So it's really incredible how that works.
And then you don't have to go buy compost from the store for your garden, because your worms just pooped it for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fallon, I want to hear about your worm farm soon.
You know what? The second I tell my 8 and 6-year-old boy this, we are going to have a worm farm. I mean,
you need to get red worms. Those are like the best option.
I can ask, is there like a specific kind of worm? I'm not well-versed in worms, I got to say.
I'm going to be honest. I don't really know what's happening. No. I'm hoping that in a few months it's going to produce something beautiful. But in the future, we will have large amounts of worms. And those can be fed to the chickens, and then their poop we can use on the garden. But apparently all you need is like some organic matter, so you can toss some wet leaves into a pile, so your food scraps. And whenever you feed them food, just feed them leaves or organic matter, things like that, and just going back and forth.
So in a sense, you're essentially taking part in just regrowing your food. So you're utilizing your waste and using it to regrow more nutrient-dense food. So how can you possibly be more resourceful?
Worms are underground livestock. So wow. Kaylin, you can have a farm with livestock.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
You have young kids too, Corey. I see it in your future.
My son, he'll be 4 in like a month, and his thing is bugs and creatures right now. So he would be, I'm already like picturing his face whenever we will go do this today, actually. I already know we're gonna go do something to start it today. But even talking about compost, I grew up in Texas and had friends who lived on ranches, and every time I would go spend the night at their house, everything would go in a bucket. Bucket would go out to the pig. And I loved that, like, nothing went to waste. And then I literally spent my entire life until I moved to the tropics, until we started composting. And just that alone has helped me get reconnected to my own land so much, even though it's so simple. But I think it actually kind of puts on the forefront of your mind, we do not waste like what we have. And I think that creates a different environment in your home surrounding food. But a follow-up question to this is, as far as aside from being like resourceful, well, it all ends up being resourceful. What would you say is like the one thing that you guys like really quote splurge on and really prioritize? Would it be raw milk?
Just because of the amount of milk we drink, it's probably raw milk. Because like Ashley said, buying a quarter or half cow is a really easy way to save money. So it's not really a splurge.
It is at that point in time, but long term.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I think that produce actually ends up being one of the more expensive things on our grocery bill right now, because that's something we haven't started making ourselves. We are in the process of doing a garden. So I think overall, I would say raw milk, definitely, because the quality really does matter. And the price, just because of like the demand, Corey, you said you can only buy half a gallon or something at once. The price obviously has to be a lot, because there is a large demand. Yeah.
It's like a dumb amount, but it's okay. I'm totally willing to pay it because it's that good, and it helps you be more thankful for it, I feel like.
I think there are herd chairs, which you probably are part of herd chair, but that is a way to kind of reduce the price slightly.
Exactly.
I mean, it's still probably expensive.
So I have not bought new clothes in 2 years. Like, that is just something that we are throwing so much of our money at this place, but I will throw money at cheese and milk. I will just throw money at it. Cheese. I am a cheese fanatic. I have a cheese bucket list, and I am on a quest to find like really cool, authentic, because I love learning about traditional food preparation techniques. It is lost in America. We don't have food culture here, and I think that that's why there's so much confusion. So I love learning about like Cotija cheese in Mexico, where they have to make it in this certain environment because of the temperatures and the humidity. And it's just like learning about these traditional cooking methods just gets me so excited. And so I will throw money at cheese. but it's because calcium is so important. And I think that along our health journey, like two things that have really stood out for me in terms of being really important is iron overload and balancing your calcium to phosphorus. Kind of everything else is minute details, maybe a few other things, but that balancing the calcium to phosphorus ratio is like truly important. And I've seen the benefits of improving that.
Well, yes. So splurging though, back to splurging. If you do splurge on quality milk, you can then make your own cheese.
Yeah.
You can also utilize the whey and soak grains. You can make kefir. You can make yogurt and cottage cheese. So it's literally like the best thing to splurge on, because the options are endless.
Yeah.
You can make splurge on an ice cream maker, and suddenly you can make ice cream.
Yeah.
Those are the purchases you need to be making in 2022.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, and something else that you guys said that I really want to highlight is, I think, and we talked about this before we started recording, but I think people are, you know, the whole like financial, like Dave Ramsey, that whole movement that happened, awesome. I'm sure like so much like fruit has come from that for so many people. But I think that for a lot of people that I've talked to that have really, really honed in on budgeting, they're used to spending a very specific amount on food each month. And that is their amount. There's no wiggle room for it. And so I think what you guys said, I just really want to highlight that sometimes food is an investment for these reasons. And traditionally, this is exactly how we would have accessed it in the first place. We didn't just go and like, you know, buy a pound of beef at a time. It was like, we had a family cow and like there was a share of it. And so I think that's really important to understand, is that sometimes it does take a big investment, but then it ends up, you know, feeding you for even a year sometimes. That what you guys said about tallow, like completely blew my mind. And I hadn't even thought about doing that.
Yeah. And I mean, even with tallow, you can make candles. Guys, there's so many different things you can actually utilize.
Cows are very fat. Cows are very fat. You know that fat.
Yeah.
I will also say I've literally switched to only using tallow on my face, and like my skin is better than it has literally ever been. I mean, it's pure magic. I also wanted to come back, Ashley. I love the comment you made about like, I haven't purchased clothes in 2 years, but like, I will throw money at cheese all day long. And I love that. I want to kind of like piggyback off of that and talk through like, how can we kind of reframe the way that we think about our budget? You know, Corey kind of touched on this as well, but like, how can we kind of shift our mentality to like, oh, this is my exact food budget. You know, like Corey and I talk about frequently, I'm going to probably sort of embarrass us saying this, but like, I don't have a food budget. Like, food is my priority. Everything else is secondary to that. Like our livelihood, our food, that's our priority. And so we don't spend as much on like medical bills or like eating out or, you know, things that have a turnover rate, like fast fashion and things like that. You know, that's just not where our priorities lie. And it just, you know, I say this truly like in grace, but I think sometimes people can get hung up on like, oh, I can't afford $7 raw milk, but like they'll go get a $7 Starbucks drink, or like, oh my gosh, I can't afford, you know, this $40, I don't know, quarter of, that's a quarter cow is probably not $40. I pulled that number out of nowhere. But people are like, oh my gosh, 40, 50 bucks. And it's like, but you easily spend that eating out, you know? So like, how can we kind of encourage people to start rethinking the way they see their budget to actually like, this isn't just your food, it's actually your life, you know?
I think it's really tough in terms of like the stage of life somebody's at in their priorities. And I think for all of us, our health journey has put this at the top of our priority list. And it's sad that it only becomes a priority when it has to be, because you've either lost your health or you need to get better. And so I think if somebody's coming into this in a good health, they're in like the best shape ever, because they can start making these changes and only like further progress their health. So the way I like to look at it is the amount of nutrients you're getting per dollar is significantly higher. And so we can go and buy all these processed, like quote unquote health foods, like, I don't know, cauliflower wraps. Those are going to be per dollar decently expensive because of processing that had to go into it. Whereas, yeah, your raw milk might be X amount, but the amount of nutrients that you're going to get from that raw milk, you could literally probably have a fourth of a cup a day and get more nutrients than like the whole package of cauliflower wraps. And so you have to kind of look at it in terms of like nutrient density, what is actually moving the needle forward in your health, as opposed to like what's flashy, like you said, what has a high turnover rate, you know, fashion, those kind of things. It isn't, so Ashley like boasting that we haven't bought clothes, on one end that's bad because our bodies has changed a lot and I think that we need new clothes.
I just don't, however. I just want cheese.
Yes, however, it really comes down to priorities and recognizing the long-term benefit of not having huge medical bills. You know, I think that's just like the biggest eye-opener is like, how much money can I save in healthcare if I treat my body right now?
So honestly, I think that modern society is kind of to blame for this because so many people do not know how to cook. And so it starts there. Mm. They're overwhelmed. I'm not going to buy the raw ingredients because it's just going to go to waste. I'm not going to cook it. It's easier for me to go buy it and source it. And so for someone who is at that place in their journey, I have a challenge to you to start cooking a meal one time a week. And the more you realize how simple cooking can be, throwing stuff in a crock pot and leaving it for 8 hours, the more you'll realize that like buying these individual ingredients is cheaper than buying this assembled crap meal from the store or a restaurant. And I love that Sarah said like the price per nutrient. I think that we need to reframe. In America, we spend the least amount per our earning than any other country in this world. And so we already we spend the least amount. It's a small percentage of our total earning that we spend on food.
Well, is that on grocery or eating out too?
I'm not sure. I just know that it probably is significantly grocery. Lower than any other country. And so again, it goes back to just like the way that America views food is just cheap and abundant rather than properly prepared with tradition and nutrients in other countries. And we miss that.
Cheap and so, abundant and quick.
Yeah. We don't have that here. It's a different culture. And so I think someone learning how to prepare a traditional meal. So like choose a country and be like, what's a traditional dish in this country? And learning how much time and effort how much like creativity and thoughtfulness goes into these meals. I think that that'll be a great exercise in getting you into realizing that this is a better long-term solution.
Well, I think one benefit that somebody might see from that is the actual yield. And so say, you know, you use a less traditional cut, like a beef shank, cooking that low and slow, you'll get like 3 or 4 meals from it. And you'll also get the broth and you'll also get all these different things. So instead of isolating it down to like one meal, this meal is going to cost X dollars on my budget. So this is going to be my weekly budget. Think of like the entire topic of this podcast. Think of how can you resource everything that came from that one piece of meat into different things that will actually save you money elsewhere. So kind of reframing your mindset of like being more resourceful and getting more in touch with your food, what that will save you long-term.
Well, and I feel like that's a perfect lead way to the fact that you guys have a resource on cooking with all these different kinds of meats. And it's your cookbook, which came out, what was that? Like a few months ago that it came out, right?
It's a very long process.
It was interesting. So that was started during our carnivore days. And so there was so much evolving, but I think a really good thing that came from carnivore is that we did experiment with all these different cuts and organs. So we learned how to cook a lot of different pieces of meat, and this isn't meant to be like sexist, but being females, we didn't feel comfortable cooking meat growing up. It wasn't our thing. We didn't use the grill. My dad grilled all the meat. It just wasn't my thing. So having to force myself to learn all these things and get really creative, it was really fun creating that cookbook. So yeah, we do have a resource that kind of goes over the different organ parts and has different quote unquote animal-based recipes. It was done with Dr. Paul Saladino. So it's not necessarily our eating guidelines. We are obviously more like you guys with pro-metabolic, more carbs, but it is still heavy on animal products and organ meats. So
it's going to challenge you to get creative. And
yeah, I would personally take the recipe and eat it with like potatoes, but that's fine. And whatever, you can do whatever you want there.
So basically, if you're looking for let's say you do buy like a full cow or a half cow or something, and you're able to get all the organs back, like that cookbook will provide you with a number of ideas on how to use every single part of that animal. Yeah. And I think something that we've missed on is like, using every part of that animal is the best way to honor the life and everything that animal did for us in the land. And so if you kind of get to more of like a spiritual level, like buying the full cow is respecting and honoring everything that cow did. That kind of was thrown in there.
But beautiful.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Can we talk about what you guys have planned? I don't know if you have you announced on Instagram what you're, okay.
We can talk about it.
No, we can talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have been working on a project for over a year now in terms of like everything that we've kind of learned along our health journey. And it involves like environmental health. So how we mitigated the mold journey, lifestyle health, how we now, like we've been into powerlifting and exercise for like so many years now. And we have a different perspective on like how you can use it to your advantage and improve your metabolism rather than down-regulating your thyroid and hurting your hormonal health. And then also all of the nutrition principles that we implement from a day-to-day, such as the balancing calcium, the phosphorus, and many of the principles that we all talk about on our platforms. So it's like kind of an all-encompassing guide that we've been working on for a year. It's taken us a lot longer because of all of the challenges that we faced here at the farm. But we are wrapping it up and we'll be releasing it in the next month.
It's just something we're excited about.
Yeah.
To help somebody along their journey be less not the right word, but less sensitive. Like at many times in my journey, I felt hopeless and I felt, you know, what do I do? There's so many different ideas of what to do. So it's kind of trying to put everything into one place in terms of like cleaning up your environment, cleaning up what you're eating, cleaning up your relationships, all these different things, because health is just entirely holistic. It's not just the food you eat. It's where you're buying your food, for example. So yeah, we're really, really, really excited to just be able to, you know, reach a little bit more people more directly, because it's, as you guys know, it's literally impossible to answer DMs all the time.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it can't happen.
No.
Can't happen.
Can't happen.
I'm so excited to see this project. I really am. You guys are amazing. And we will definitely link your Instagram and other ways to connect in the show notes, because I'm telling you, your Instagram is just the best. I just love it. And we'll be sure to send people to your Angel Acres page as well, because I know you guys do, you know, ship out at least eggs, right? Are you shipping more than that at this point?
It's in the works. Right now it's just eggs. Okay. But we are hoping to be able to be a raw dairy source and other products.
Similar. And regenerative produce.
Yeah.
So there's a tree. Cool. There's a tree called a pawpaw tree. P-A-W-P-A-W.
Corey, I know you have access to like the coolest fruits.
Yeah.
I listen to a podcast you're talking.
Exotic. What even is? Yeah. Every time I see a fruit here, I'm like, what is that? I've never even seen it before.
And so pawpaws are a tropical fruit that can be grown in Michigan. So we are picking up pawpaw trees on Monday. And so long-term, we hope to have like regenerative produce and regenerative meat that we can ship all over. Right now we only have eggs, but then we get our next lamb batch in July. And so we'll be selling half lamb boxes again. Yeah. And then hopefully next year we can do like fruit, marmalades, jams, things that we can ship easily,
and raw milk
and butters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I'm so excited. I cannot wait to see all of this flesh out. Cannot wait to see the project you guys are rolling out. Just want to thank you guys again for being here. This conversation was incredible. Both of you are just such a wealth of knowledge. And I appreciate just the raw and very relatable way that you shared your journey just on Instagram and, you know, of course, here today. And thank you for enlightening us about so many things that probably most of us did not know a thing about before this, i.e. worm farming. That's going on all of our to-do list today. So
just that's thank task. You guys. That is your task.
Yes, that's our weekend goal, is to start a worm farm. So anyway, thank you guys for being here. You're both just lovely and wonderful. We appreciate you guys so much. And thank you guys for listening to this episode. We will see you on the next one.